listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Conversation during the break, D-Mac and I are breaking down our criminal plans on escaping the country.
Yeah.
The things we talk about during the break.
It's rudimentary. Trust me. It's nothing all that sophisticated.
Ooh, scandalous.
Dude, did you see my my buddy Craig Carton's going to jail for like 3.5 years?
I did.
Yeah, how about that? 3.5, wait, 42 months, what is that? Yeah, no, like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Guy I went to college with, guy who I worked with at KBPI, guy who I've known since we were both 18 years of age. He goes on a radio station, and the mea culpa is it's pretty weak. So, but I feel bad for Craig because I go way back with him, and essentially he did some bad things. But he hurt himself. And his family way more than he hurt other people.
Uh-huh.
And the amount of people that he really hurt was pretty limited. And he didn't rob money from his charity foundation, which he was suspected to have done, but they found that he did not do that in court. But he definitely, he did some other bad things that you can't do. He basically ripped off a handful of really rich people to pay off gambling debts because he was addicted to blackjack specifically. So he had a ticket a resale business that I have an inside track. I'm getting these tickets. I promise you a return on your investment. And he faked it all because he had these ridiculous gambling debts. And he was intending to just sort of, it's a Ponzi scheme. It's one money goes one way to do something else.
Right.
Yeah. But it was a bunch of it wasn't like he was ripping off grandmothers, out of their retirement. It wasn't like a Bernie Madoff thing, not even close. But it was illegal, and he shouldn't have done it. And it's cost him his wife. They're, legally separated, and he'll be in jail for 3.5 years.
Gotcha.
But I guarantee you he'll be back on a radio station when he gets out.
Why wouldn't you? It's a notoriety.
Yeah, and he's really good at his job.
Mm-hmm.
So wait and see. But I've tried to reach out to him a couple times, and I just haven't, I haven't been able to get through to him.
I wonder why.
Well, he shouldn't have been that hard, to be honest with you. He's doing all sorts of different things. I'll try to, before he goes off to jail, just to...
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Just wanted to say, hey, before you go off to jail, good luck in there.
Yeah, my wife can't stand it. She's known him a long time, too. Okay. She just... Rightfully so.
Coach me up on a baseball thing. Why is a bat flip so insulting? Why is that fighting? It's not fighting words. Why is that a fighting action in baseball?
It shouldn't be.
Okay, good.
In my opinion.
Okay.
To me, strike the guy out, get him out. If he hits a home run off you, oh well. He can freaking bring a mariachi band out there as far as if you don't like it, strike him out. Now, we're talking about Major League Baseball, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you're bat flipping as a 12-year-old and you're on some sort of monster team yakking out home runs left and right and you're beating a team by 20 runs and you're bat flipping, then in my opinion, you're a jerky kid that probably has a jerky coach. And, bat flips don't have any kind of significance. But for fun, Chad, I would always, maybe a couple times a year with my youth baseball teams, we would practice bat flips.
Nice.
Because I'll tell you where it came from. Jim Valvano used to have his team practice cutting down the nets.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning if we achieve something together, we got to practice everything.
Right.
This is the John Wooden, let's practice tying our shoes.
This is how you put your socks on, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Right.
We would practice running on and off the field.
Mm-hmm.
In a game, if I did not see everybody run on and off the field, I would literally, during games, tell everybody to come back. And I think that might have happened once, because the kids get the message pretty quick. There's just a way of going about things. So I know what you're referencing, but to me, you're flipping a bat is just a celebration of doing something really hard to do, which is hitting a home run. And if the pitcher doesn't like it, then he should just nut up and try to strike you out. A pitcher throwing a ball 95 miles an hour at a dude who, the dude isn't allowed to throw a bat at the pitcher, but the pitcher can throw the ball at the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me, that's total BS. Tough luck. That's my opinion on it. So I like bat flips. I think baseball is boring enough, even though I love baseball. Bat flips are freaking fun to watch and give you a sense of fun, period. So I am a big bat flip guy. I love staring down home runs. The reason why it's a big deal is just it's viewed as unsportsmanlike and in your face sort of thing and that sort of stuff.
It kills me, though. You hit a home run. In baseball, if you look at the pitcher too long, if you run around the bases with too much enthusiasm.
Or too slowly.
Too slow. You trot your home run trot.
Right.
If you high-five the first base coach too vigorously, they're going to get upset. And now the pitcher's going to bean you. Is there a circumstance?
Well, it's not you. Sometimes it's who's ever up next.
Right. So is there a circumstance if you were a major league pitching coach or manager where you would instruct your pitcher to hit someone?
No.
Never.
But.
Never.
No, not on purpose. But I absolutely would coach throwing inside.
Okay.
Because you cannot just give away the plate.
Right.
Because if you're not willing to throw inside, a guy's just going to scooch up on the plate, and then you have no outside of the plate. Now you can't mess around with the outside of the plate if you can't throw inside. So I would emphasize throwing inside.
Taking ownership of the entire plate.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And if it hits a dude every now and then, all right. But I would never instruct or advocate ever, under any circumstance, a pitcher to throw at a batter, ever.
How about when they throw behind the batter to send a message?
Stupid. Dumb. You're just going to get a warning for the bench, a warning for you, or get yourself kicked out of the game. Right. What's the point? You know what? How about train, be strong, throw bullpens, strike dudes out, get pop fly. How about just playing baseball? Enough of this Mickey Mouse sort of crap. And if you're good enough to hit a home run, you know how hard it is to hit a home run?
Hard.
It's hard. It's awesome to see bat flips. It's not the most sportsmanlike thing in the world, okay? I mean, I gotcha. And maybe the context of the game, like if you're down 10 or up 10, perhaps a bat flip in that certain situation is probably no good. Bat flips in high school and college are definitely going to be looked at as a negative, for sure.
I would agree.
So you may want to control that sort of thing. Because in high school and college, if you bat flip and the game's not really decided one way or the other, then maybe that's the spark for the other team to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you giving the other team a rally moment? Put them down like a dead dog and move on. My son is struggling with this because he's a spicy player.
Ooh, spicy.
Who often mixes it up and raises the boil of the entire game. And sure, there's a positive because it keeps his teammates and the energy up. But boy, you're giving some pretty big inspiration for the other team to, you know, want to try a little bit extra hard. And we had a game just the other day. He definitely did something to mix things up a tad, as he's wont to do. We talked about it later at home. The team rallied back down 6 runs in the 5th inning to win the game, and you would have thought they won the World Series. They were throwing the gloves and jumping up and down and yelling and screaming, and, I mean, they were celebrating like they had just won the World Series. And I had a talk with my son, and I go, well, you know, you're part of that because you're the one that got them all fired up. So I think the best in-your-face thing is to beat your opponent as easily as possible and act like it's no big deal. It's just a day at the office. That, to me, is the biggest insult. And it probably emotionally will put a team down more than anything. But it's Major League Baseball, Chad.
Right.
And so forget all that crap. It's Major League Baseball.
I agree.
Freaking bat flip away.
That's my take.
Yeah.
We have celebrations in the NFL. The NBA guys certainly have their fun and celebrate.
Yeah, it's in Major League Baseball, you're not going to motivate a team more than they're all really good. They're all professionals. So bat flip away.
I'm with you.
Have some fun.
I think they would bring more kids in.
And if you're not a good enough pitcher to strike the next guy out or whatever, and you want to hit him like a ding-dong, then, you know, whatever. And by the way, you're in the National League, you're coming to the plate.
Right.
Theoretically. Or if you're not going to come to the plate, what, are you going to get your, you know, designated, your pinch hitter hit?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, pal. Thanks, pitcher. I don't think position players like pitchers thrown at batters ever. Because they know the people that have to pay the price for it are them, not the pitchers. Now, if you were allowed to throw bats at the pitchers, like if a pitcher throws a ball at you, you say, okay, stand there. Here we go. I get, from 60 feet, 6 inches, I get a bat toss. You know, okay.
Right.
I saw the 30 for 30 on Junior Seau.
How was it?
The parallel lives you have with Junior Seau are, it's pretty remarkable. You must have thought of that throughout the course of your NFL career, how you and Junior were really very similar.
Well, you know, he's a Southern California guy. I'm a Southern California guy. So
he's from Oceanside.
Yeah.
San Diego.
About an hour south of me.
Tough part, apparently, of northern San Diego.
Yes. And my entire life, my entire football career, I chased Junior Seau.
Mm.
So,
I'm curious, how many years are you behind him?
I'm only 2 years of high school.
Okay.
But because he did only 3 at USC and I did 5 at Colorado, once we got into the NFL, we were pretty far apart.
Okay, gotcha. But it was the linebackers in Southern California, arguably, was Junior Seau and you for a period of time.
We were considered, yeah. Well, he was Mr. All-State, Mr. All-American. I wasn't quite to that level. But every time I picked up a magazine, you know, I'm looking at it and he's on the cover. And I'm like, I want to be on the cover. I got to beat this guy somehow. USC, you know, they recruit me. I'm like, well, you got Junior Seau. I don't want to follow in his footsteps. I don't want to, you know, I want to go someplace else and make my own mark. In the AFC West, Junior Seau sets the mark for linebackers. So I'm trying to make a name for myself while Junior Seau is pumping his fist and doing his thing. We were at Pro Bowls together.
You were in Seattle, right?
Yes, we're at Pro Bowls together. We're in New England together. We share a table. Bill Belichick buys us both rocking chairs because we're both so old. We sit in the back of the meeting room in our rocking chairs and we share a table together. So my entire career has always kind of been, you know, surrounded or, you know, related to Junior Seau in so many different ways. But I'd love to hear what you took away from this 30 for 30.
Well, I'm thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know how closely connected you are to Junior Seau. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Chad, what was your relationship then with Junior?
Well, we were great friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. His locker was next to mine.
Yeah.
We would sing John Mayer songs together.
He described himself as just like a beach bum, essentially, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But he loved football. Played for, I mean, I think it's unbelievable you played for 15 years. He played for 20. It's stunning.
He would walk around the facility barefoot because he putting shoes on was painful because his toes were just so beat up and
he wanted
up.
To win that Super Bowl ring so bad.
So bad.
And he was on one of the Patriots teams that didn't.
The
catch. Yeah, the crazy, you know.
Great dude, great teammate, amazing football player. But I think towards the end, he did not see life away from football. And that's what kind of started that dark cloud over his head.
It's tough to watch.
Yeah.
I love you guys, you football guys. I really do. I have so much respect for you. The way you guys lay things out. I become friends with so many of you guys after you stop playing. What you guys do. Man, oh man, oh man.
We love it, though. We love it.
But, you know, it's hard for me to watch it and just to say, Chad, you have 8, maybe 9 years, and that's it. And we're going to stop playing football after that. Good luck. If I'm your dad, mm-hmm. if I was your dad, I would just insist that we would have to have a deal. That there's a cap. Maybe, like, till you get to free agency, you get a big money deal, and that's got to be it. Because the stuff with Junior Seau, it's so just, it's all CTE type of stuff and, you know, concussion related and just terrible behavior,
mm-hmm.
irresponsible to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
ultimately, at the end of the day, bad for his kids. Craziness, because when you retire, and they played like his retirement speech, insane, sweating, not making any sense in his speech, just one of the most bizarre retirement speeches. And of course, it's even more bizarre because like 2 days later, he signed with the Patriots.
Right.
Crazy.
So he was graduating, not retiring.
Graduating, yeah. So, and then what was really sad was seeing how after a 20-year NFL career, he didn't fit into the world. He tried to do some dumb reality show that he hated doing. He was out of touch with, like, really his best friends, really way out of touch with his family, couldn't maintain relationships whatsoever, couldn't maintain business partnerships. He just was a disaster. And then ultimately took his life. So, and I don't know when the right time is to stop playing football to avoid all that other stuff. It's just this guy is just so unbelievably talented. And I just think to myself, it's such an incredible sport, okay? I get it. It is an unbelievable sport. I think you got to put some sort of, that's it for me.
For guys like Junior Seau, and for me, for a majority of my career, we would say insane things like, I'm willing to die for this, and actually mean it.
Yeah.
That's how much passion and love for the game it was. That's how the feeling on the field was so visceral and so alive. And okay, you've played in your band.
Yes.
And you've had 300 people cheering, yay! And you're kind of, but yeah, it's kind of
that.
It's kind of directed at the stage. Imagine making you felt the stadium right before kickoff, and the stadium's vibrating and all that, right?
I'll give you one. I wrote like a Avs parody song called Bork with the Bork to Ba with the Ba. Bork with the Bork to Wa to Wa. Footy, 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 said the Sack, sit up, jumped the Forsberg. This is back when they were Stanley Cup time. There you go, hockey fan. I wrote a parody song. Performed it at Red Rocks in front of 10,000 people.
Nice.
So I think that's the closest moment that you're about to describe, but I felt it.
So imagine making a play on a football field.
Yeah.
All your adrenaline's already going because you're playing football. You're already in this amazing place. You make a play, 65,000 people jump to their feet, and they're yelling and screaming, but all their energy is directed at you.
I can't imagine it. Well, I mean, I can sort of because I've had a moment.
You can't.
But
you can't.
I did walk, when I walked off the stage at Red Rocks, I was like, wow.
So imagine, yes, every nerve in your body vibrating, everything, just every synapse, everything happened like that.
Oof.
And that happening, I don't know, 12, 15 times a Sunday?
Yeah, and could happen every week.
Yeah.
The possibility exists it could happen every week.
Oh, I made a, you know, outside of one game, I made a play every time I got on the field.
Right.
Some big play. So your Junior Seau, he made a tackle 10 yards downfield. He pumped his fist, and the whole crowd in San Diego lost their minds. Trying to replace that. I'm not trying to make excuses for the game and the CTE aspect of your story, but just the difficulty in trying to disconnect from that life and move into regular life. Yeah, I make a business deal. It's great. Mm-hmm. I get to come in here with you and read some great things on the text line about people liking my points or my thoughts. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not 65,000 people jumping to their feet.
No.
The input of energy that you get to feel like that outside of football players and freaking rock stars on some stadium tour, no one else in the world gets to feel that.
It's addictive.
Oh, man. It's a special thing. And you've got to somehow stay grounded in the midst of that so you don't become addicted to it and so you don't look for the rest of your life trying to find that.
So why are you like you and Junior's like Junior when you guys more or less went down the same path?
I think just different personality types. I came back and I worked in my snake shop. I literally picked up poop with my hands cleaning up snake cages.
You grounded yourself.
Purposefully.
Mm.
And then I had employees who I hung with. I wasn't the owner of Seau Restaurant where I breeze through and I don't know anybody's name.
Right.
I'm sitting down with my employees. We're eating lunch together.
Right.
So I tried to be as grounded as possible, recognizing that this is going to end, and hopefully I've got another 50 years of my life to go.
And Junior never really had that moment.
Never. He was always Junior Seau.
KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. You know, the that stood out to me as well. That he did have a restaurant and he had a foundation that he was involved with, but I don't know what his level of real commitment to either one really was.
His foundation gave away a lot of money.
They said he was really deeply involved with it, but again, I don't know. Maybe he was involved, but the passion that he had for it, you know.
It did not mirror his passion for the game.
No.
No.
And at the end, if you set up a foundation, you have a board and people are running the stuff, and you just have events that you do year after year after year after year, right? Like, you probably become less involved, period.
Yeah.
Seems like a great guy, and it's a sad, tragic story, and it's a well-done 30 for 30, so.
I've got a DVR. I'm going to watch it, but yeah, the relational to my life aspect of it, you know, had me a little concerned, so I'll watch it with an eye towards that.
Joe Flacco talked about drafting a quarterback at 10.
I don't know. I think I had a pretty good outlook on it last year, and it is what it is. I want to get this team to be the best it is with me at the quarterback position. So obviously that's not the most importance to draft a quarterback. But if we do, that's completely out of my control. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to compete, and he's going to have to come out here and be on the field with me every day too. So, I'm all ready for that.
Love the attitude. We've been asking for that sort of attitude from our quarterbacks for, it feels like, years. He's the first one to kind of own it in years. Love it. Loved watching Joe Flacco out there today. Looks great. I mean, they're passing against the air, Chad. You know, it's just, but still, you know, you just sort of get a sense of how everybody's fitting in with everybody. This is the most optimistic by far I've been about the Broncos since Peyton Manning was here. It's not even close. It just is, just coaching-wise, player-wise, leadership-wise, just everything seems to be making more sense under. It was just so hard for me looking at Case Keenum to believe that he really possessed what was necessary to lead an organization, and anybody who had doubts about that was ultimately right. Impossible to see out of Paxton Lynch. I mean, it was just, you know, dude, when he threw the Paxton patch and threw the ball away in a practice on like fourth and the game's on the line, and he throws the ball 15 feet over everybody's head because he doesn't want to make a mistake. It's like, yeah, you just lost everybody. Mark Sanchez, when he takes a knee in training camp, when it's all you have to do is ground the ball and bring on your kicker,
right?
And he takes a knee. You know, there's all these moments. Trevor Siemian, who's, you know, Von Miller's calling Peter Parker. You don't want to be Peter Parker. You want to be Spider-Man. And then you see Joe Flacco. And this Halloween, a good Halloween party for the Broncos, and Brock Osweiler dresses up like a ballerina, literally, and Peyton Manning dressed up like Elvis, the king.
Right.
You take these just sort of moments of, you know, what are these guys all about?
Right.
So this was such a great what are you all about moment from Joe Flacco. He's about owning this position. He doesn't want, whatever. You want to draft one, I guess. But, you know, this is my job, and that's that. Now, of course he doesn't want them to draft a quarterback, Chad.
No.
He'd be insane to want them to draft a quarterback. I did find out, like, his wife and kids have not moved out here yet. They're finishing school. However, there are 5 kids under the age of 6. What are we talking about? Dropping out of first grade a couple months early? Somehow it tells me you'll get to second grade just fine.
You want your kids to have a sense of normalcy while you're in the league. You can't just take them out of school.
Dude, the deal was done in January. January, February, March, April. That's 4 months. It's school. What school? You're in kindergarten or first grade? It's not that traumatic.
I'll push back on your line of thinking on this completely. You want your family to have as normal of a life as possible.
No kidding. Why do you think they're not out here yet? Right. Of course. And I was laughing when I found that out. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. Because he's waiting to see what happens in the draft, see what everything is, and then we'll talk about, you know, if the family's really moving out here or not. Frankly, if I was him, if you draft a quarterback at 10, I'm not moving here.
True.
I might get an apartment or something, so when everybody comes out, we can rent a place. You know, Case Keenum bought like a mansion.
Mm-hmm. You don't do that as a player.
Dude.
You don't do that.
No, Case had plans.
You don't do that.
He bought a big place for a lot of money.
I appreciate his optimism, no matter how poorly founded it was. But going back to the optimism thing, when Vaughn talked about how optimistic he is, he was almost getting me.
I was like, Vaughn kind of always. Do we have that, Richie? Vaughn talking about how optimistic he was. We had him. He was on live. Fon's kind of always like that, though.
But, I mean, it wasn't just rah-rah optimism. We got the Shanahan offense. We got Vic. So we got two proven, you know, schemes on both sides of the ball.
Dude,
got,
that's what Vaughn always is.
But then he starts talking about the young guys. You go,
all right,
wow.
All right, okay.
And then he starts talking about Mike Munchak. And, you know, he goes into all that. He goes into how good it feels with this new theme of a new coach, new optimism. Again.
Okay, fine.
But I rarely fall for a rah-rah speech.
You are falling for it. Because Vaughn says stuff like this all the time, year after year after year.
True. True.
All right, here's a little bit of Vaughn.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, you know, we're running, you know, a branch of, you know, Shanahan's offense on offense, and we're running Fangio defense on defense. It's two great schemes. We got a lot of great players. We had a lot of young guys that came and made a lot of great plays and had an impact on the team last year. And those guys are going to be second-year players this year. You know, their load is going to jump all the way up. Cortland Sutton is going to play out of his mind this year. And Bradley Chubb and, you know, Phillip Lindsay and all of those guys. And, you know, and myself. And, you know, we got Flacco. He's a big-time quarterback. You know, he knows what it feels like to win a Super Bowl. And he's been there. He's done it.
True.
And we, you know, I've been there and I've done it on defense as well. So
true.
We got a lot of great pieces. We just got to go out there and win. And I think with Fangio leading the ship, it's a good fit for us. It just feels good. It just feels good. It just feels different. And, you know, we got to get everybody all the way in. It's still early. You know, I'm one of the most optimistic guys that there are. You know, so if you're asking me, it feels good. And this is the team to do it.
Well, I think all those things are true.
Right.
And Vaughn absolutely is one of the most optimistic guys time after time after time. That's why it's fun to be around Vaughn.
And I know he said similar things when the last regime started here, but I don't think he believed him as he does this time.
I hope you're right. Sure. I'll stay optimistic like that, too.
Every year, I've
just been around Vaughn a lot when he said things like this.
Yeah.
It is kind of a... You know, it's a roll your eyes moment because when you hear him, it's the boy that cries wolf.
Right.
I mean, I've never heard Vaughn in 8 years at this time of year. The only year that I didn't hear him say stuff like this was when the year he was doing the Chris Harris thing. He wasn't around.
Every year in Seattle, they came out with a new slogan.
Yeah.
It's now time. So every year in the off season, at mini camps and during training camp, you know, I'm one of the, you know, the bigger players they want to interview me, and I've got to do all these interviews, and I'm trying to incorporate
this
corny slogan into my optimism speech. You know what? This is going to be the second year with John Kitna under center.
There you go.
We got
what else we got going on?
We got Corn Robinson. He's out of rehab finally. I think he's going to have his head on straight.
Holy cow, that is awesome! What else, Chad? What else?
Ray Rhodes, the defensive coordinator. I think he's recovered from his heart murmur. This is going to be a great year for him.
No heart murmur. That is amazing.
Lane Johnson can't lay off the.
Lane Johnson can't. Wait, where did that come from?
So I would do all these things every year, and for the most part. As much as I expected to win every time I stepped on the football field, I'm just saying that stuff. Just try. Yes, you put a microphone in my face. I've got to give the company line to be optimistic. But of the 8 years there were a couple years where I was like, man, I want to say, no, for real.
This year.
You got to believe me.
This year is different.
We got Matt Hasselbeck and Trent Dilfer.
Having the time of his life.
I mean, it was different. It's different now.
We got Ricky Waters and Son Alexander.
Oh.
We got Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson. It's going to be amazing.
22 Janos, we would be all right.
All right.
Yeah. And so, you know, it didn't actually pan out the way I had hoped.
It was funny. I was talking to Champ Bailey and Brian Dawkins after Tebow had left.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, how did you guys stay so positive, like, during, you know, kind of that time? And they both were like, what were we supposed to say?
Right.
And I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah. Here we go. It was not great, but what are we supposed to say?
You told the company line, but I just think, in this case, I think Vaughn actually believes it and feels it this year.
Well, I do too, actually. I'm here to pass the good word, to say it does feel different, and it does look different. And it's the most optimistic I've been, like I said, since Peyton was here. So I'm all for it. I'm excited about it. It was funny. We were talking about scenarios, though, where a quarterback would be drafted at 10. Now, here's one for you, Chad. Here's one for you. What if John Elway, who only has 3 years left on his contract, wants to become an owner? Right? Makes sense, logically.
Can't work for a team if you're an owner.
You can't be part of an ownership bid if you are an employee of a current NFL team.
True.
So you gotta step away at some point, probably put a little distance between you and the team, and then get back to it. I'd say 6 months to a year, you got to be just kind of, you know, off of the facility, that sort of thing.
Right.
Okay. So in his mid-60s, is it more likely that you would think John Elway, in his mid-60s, would want to be an NFL owner or continue the job that he's doing?
I think he'd want to be an owner. Who wouldn't want to be an owner?
I agree. And I think it's the reasonable next level for John. There absolutely was a circumstance where he could be the owner right now. If things had gone his way back in the day, Edgar Kaiser kind of spoiled that party with lawsuits and that thing when Pat Bowlen was trying to give chunks of the team to John Elway, which he would have obviously bought up more chunks over time. And really, realistically, John Elway at this point easily could have been the owner of the Denver Broncos or right in the position to take that last sort of ownership step with probably a group of people. So now, think to yourself for a second. If you're John Elway and you do reasonably want to have ownership, and there's no guarantee Brittany Bowlen will be the next controlling partner of the Broncos. I'm told that she's laser focused on it and that it's just right. You know, it's going to happen. You know, that whole thing. Okay. I mean, you know, Beth is over here with Bill Bowlen and there's lawsuits going on over there. But there's still a possibility the Broncos could get sold. I mean, that definitely still exists. If you're John, and there's a possibility, Chad, that you could own the team or be part of an ownership group, you're going to want the team to be in good shape when you take over, right?
Ideally. Well, it all depends on your plan. Do you want to get them as cheaply as possible?
No, I don't think you care about that. Because it's going to be some other billionaire's money. It's not going to really be your money. You're probably going to have a stake in it. But that's not going to be. It's going to be. The Broncos are going to be 3 years, maybe a $2.8, $3 billion team.
Right.
So you're not going to drive. The price isn't going to be driven down.
If you're coming off a Super Bowl, that could be $3.5
billion. Oh, well, sure. Yeah, I mean.
And you're coming off 4-12, that could be, you know, 2.6.
I would say that's not an
issue. That's $900 million difference.
I would say
that's not our money, but that's a lot of money.
So my question to you though is, if you're Elway and you maybe want to own the team in 3 years, what do you want that team to look like? You may want to get a quarterback, have him develop, so by the time you come into ownership, that guy is good to go. That guy's your guy. Think about it for a second. If you drafted Drew Lock, who to me is the most Elway-esque quarterback of this class, in 4 years, he'll be, first of all, you'll still have his rights. You eventually you'll have a fifth right extension.
Option of the fifth round.
Fifth year
option, yes.
And you could franchise if you needed to. For 2 more years, and you're going to have a quarterback with time under his belt. This, to me, is an interesting conspiracy concept that could be reasonable why the Broncos may draft Drew Lock with that number 10 pick. What do you think of that? Because any other scenario actually doesn't make sense.
Drafting the quarterback.
Because John wouldn't be around to see the payoff.
So you're saying, well, this conspiracy theory that you're repeating is saying that John Elway, because he has possible ownership plans, that is going to direct the direction of the 10th pick in the draft.
This year, yeah. Maybe, because you'd want somebody who, first of all, is a high-quality quarterback. I mean, okay, is Joe Flacco still the quarterback here in 4 years when he's 38 years old?
Odds are more than likely not.
Odds are not. Who would you want to be your quarterback in 4 years? Would you want a guy who's still on his rookie contract and you're really not going to have to bank up the Brinks truck? Or do you want to just go this kind of perpetual free agent route time after time? But if the guy pays off, if the guy pays off, he's there for the next... I mean, how long is Russell Wilson going to be in Seattle?
At least, well, he's got one more year in this deal, then the four-year extension, at least 5 more years.
12-year career, right?
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Luck's going to be 12 to 14 years. You just go through it. I mean, that's the way to go, right? When you're, how long has Philip Rivers been running the show down there in Charger land?
Well, 17 years now.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can put other pieces around it to try to be successful year after year after year. But if you really can't get that guy, you're just in this kind of, well, you're right where the Broncos are, right where they've been.
So, again, this conspiracy theory is saying that John Elway would draft a quarterback at the 10th spot because of his future ownership plans, not because he thinks Drew Lock is the true quarterback of the future.
Well, no, he would. No, he definitely would. And he wants to get to the future. And it's not exactly a win-now mentality. It's kind of a pseudo-win-now mentality. Because the players he'd pick up in rounds 2, 3, 4 would all be, you know, high-quality guys. They'd be guys that could they really need. You know, guys who could play.
Okay, but if John had no inklings or no thoughts of being an owner, and you point out many times right. His contract is
if
up
he didn't want to be
years.
An owner at all, there is no way he would draft a quarterback at 10.
Why not?
Because it wouldn't pay off for him in time, and it wouldn't help him enough right now.
As a scout, as a pro personnel guy, as a general manager, your selection is based on whether it pays off for you?
Well, you tell me. How long is John going to be doing what he's doing? How long do any of us, and this is not a slight on John, by the way.
Right.
This is not, I swear to God, this is not a slight on John. Think about whatever your job is. How you function in your job probably depends on how long you want to be in that job. Is that fair or not?
Yes.
So if you have goals where there's a certain timeline that's looming, you may do things differently than if you think you've got a long period of time to do things.
True.
You're probably going to be a little bit more desperate and take chances if your timeline is shorter than longer.
Okay.
I'm just going through the logic plane here, right here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be upset if they do take a quarterback, and I'm not going to be upset if they don't. But to me, it just signals different ideas of the way John sees things.
As a general philosophy, I don't give the Broncos any control over my emotions. I'm always in charge of my emotions.
If John takes a quarterback, to me, you know what I'm going to think? John does want to own the team.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't want the team to stink when he gets in that position to possibly own the team. And you know what? That makes sense. If John doesn't draft a quarterback at 10, specifically Drew Lock, because I don't think Haskins has a chance at all. It just doesn't strike me as an Elway type of guy. Drew Lock strikes me. Drew Lock's played in more games. He's been in just. He's just more of a John Elway-like sort of guy. That's mm-hmm. all. And that's not to rag on Haskins. I think Haskins could be fine in the NFL, although it's weird how his stock is kind of, you know, dipping. And I think even Daniel Jones, maybe. But I think Daniel Jones is essentially like a third-round quarterback. I've watched a lot of like Daniel Jones games. I don't see. I mean, have you watched Daniel Jones play football?
I'm not wowed. No.
No.
I would like.
Really, seriously, what's the difference between Daniel Jones and Clayton Thorson?
It's a shade better.
A little bit. Yeah. Watch that matchup between the two of them. Not this past year, but the year before. It was just a game. It's like 20-7 or something like that. There was nothing to it. There have been times where Drew Lock looks unbelievable. There have been times.
There have been times where he didn't look so unbelievable.
True, but you know,
high quality competition.
He's played a lot of games,
which is a great thing. I think ideally you'd want your college quarterback to start 17, 18 games
at least
if you're going to be drafting him in the top 10. Now, a guy like Kyler Murray comes along, you know, that he throws that dynamic out the window. But if we're going to evaluate quarterbacks, give me 18 games to look at. Let me see you grow. Let me see you progress.
Yeah, I mean, how many games has Haskins and Murray even played?
what, Haskins has started?
13, yeah. 12, 13, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
And he had a bad game against Purdue, and I don't know. What are we even looking at here?
Right.
So I think this could go a bunch of different ways, and we'll have fun next Thursday on our War Room draft party thing where Mike Evans will just talk about how Ryan Finley would be great in the third round, which, of course, is preposterous. Because if you take Ryan Finley in the third round to literally sit on the bench, you're going to give up on a guy like Kahale Waring out of San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know who Kahale Waring is, then you need to do a little bit more research. And I haven't heard Mike name one guy in the second or third round that he projects as some sort of significant starter. You know, Mac Wilson is foreign territory for the morning show. They don't understand who that is. They really haven't talked significantly about what it would take to get Dalton Risner, and they've never mentioned Garrett Bradbury's name ever. They don't talk about DeAndre Baker or Greedy Williams. They don't talk about N'Keal Harry, whose stock is rising, by the way, and we'll get to him in a second. All they say is just take a guy in the third round, and then that's fine. When we know analytically, the odds of a guy in the second, third, or fourth round, somewhere range about 18% that he's going to have a likelihood of any kind of success in the NFL whatsoever.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I'll take a coin flip at 50-50, which is more or less the first round, including the ding-dongs in the 20s, which never should be taken. But I'll take that coin flip in the first round, which it is. Look through NFL history. Look through the 117 first-round guys drafted since 1965. Do your homework and realize 50% of those dudes gave their teams a chance to win, and 18% of the guys in the second through the fourth round gave their teams a chance to win. And you tell me that's a plan? My goodness. This is The Drive.
I consider myself the king of teases.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Keenum dials up the deep ball, and it's caught for a touchdown. Demaryius Thomas.
Is that it? Okay. C-Mac with Chad Brown. Appreciate you listening. Love everybody on the text line. You guys are awesome. Even the people that hate me. It's all right. I love you. I love D-Mac, you're a moron. So I guess based on your statement, why draft anybody in the second through seventh round? How does that make any sense? There's a lot of people that are going to start. All right, I'll keep reading. Perhaps the Broncos should package all their picks in round 2 through 7 and try to trade up for a single first-round pick, since those are the only picks that are going to pay off in the NFL, according to your research and homework. No, my friend.
Now, okay, I think you didn't illustrate it well enough. You were talking about second, third, and fourth-round quarterbacks at the 18% success ratio.
I was, yes.
Not all second, third, and fourth-round picks.
No, they're second, third, and fourth-round picks that become instant starters and legends, Hall of Famers, and almost at every position group you can find incredible quality players in second, third, and fourth round. That's why, when in doubt, go auto-draft and just draft the best player available and don't worry about it, and right. You'll be fine. That's how you got Cortland Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Auto-draft is just fine. The advantage of getting a guy in the first round is a fifth-year option. Well, you know, the khaki pantsers like to ignore that fact. Demaryius Thomas is now a New England Patriot. What do you think about that, Chad?
I'm not surprised at all. I am not surprised. I think they got,
you know, they got rid of Chris Hogan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they got rid. They didn't offer him a deal, and he signed for just like a one-year, $2 million deal. I believe with the Panthers, Chris Hogan.
Yes, he did.
And DT's deal is like 1.2, which is fine, and tons of incentives.
Tons of incentives. Tons of Patriots, what they do with older guys is they do the roster bonus thing or the active roster bonus thing or the per game bonus. So basically, you got to be active to get the money. So it's very similar, you know, years and years and years different, but looking at his deal, very similar to my deal with the Patriots. Not a whole lot of money up front, not a huge salary. But if you play and you participate and you play well, you got a chance to get a bonus for every game, and you reach other certain incentives, and it's all fantastic. But they're not going to just give it to you as an older guy, particularly for DT, an older guy coming off a pretty tricky injury for a receiver. But I'm not surprised that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels saw value in bringing him in.
Yeah.
They do have 8 receivers on the roster, 7 if you take away Matthew Slater out of that because he's not really truly a receiver. So there's no guarantee he's going to make the squad.
Yeah, I know. In fact, I'll be surprised if he makes the team.
Well, you know.
I think they would like him to make the team because, you know, Josh, listen, DT means a lot to Josh McDaniels. A lot. DT was Josh McDaniels' first draft pick ever. And Josh McDaniels and Brian Sanders did a great job with Demaryius Thomas. Because at Georgia Tech, first of all, they barely threw the ball at Georgia Tech. And he was hurt. So there's no doubt, Chad, they took a bit of a risk taking Demaryius Thomas where they did. And it paid off.
He's huge risk. He beyond being hurt, beyond not throwing the ball very often, the passing attack wasn't very complicated. It was So to project him into an NFL offense, that took some major skill and a lot of evaluation to make that happen.
It was a home run. And then they doubled up by moving up and getting Tim Tebow, which, of course, they, you know, you didn't need to move up to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Should have just stayed pat, picked up Tebow in the second round. Nobody else was going to pick him, but it's all right. N'Keal Harry. Arizona State. I know I'm biased, but I've been watching this guy just rip up the Pac-12, and I know you have too because you do a lot of Pac-12 games. The thing that makes N'Keal Harry the most dangerous, and this is according to Pro Football Focus, Harry finished with the draft class's 9th highest receiving grade, 12th highest overall grade, okay? So he's a good quality guy. But here's the difference. He tied to lead the draft class with 61 explosive plays of at least 15 yards over the past two seasons. And he does not have really explosive speed. So this dude makes catches in traffic and is tough and strong enough to get yards afterwards.
Breaks tackles.
So, and is a punt returner. So for all the speed of DK Metcalf, who I still think is a fun toy to play with, no doubt. To me, the most Demaryius Thomas sort of like guy, and we are talking about Demaryius Thomas as the second best receiver in Broncos history, correct? Next to Rod Smith.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
Right?
I suppose you can argue.
So if I were to tell you that I think N'Keal Harry would be either better than DT, right up there with Rod Smith, or it's 1, 2, and 3, is that a guy that you'd like to have on your team?
Absolutely.
This is the guy.
And he comes in, or at least from an evaluation standpoint, Arizona State's passing offense was years and light years above what DT was doing back in college.
Oh, so way beyond.
So the projection is that much easier and cleaner and clearer. You're not saying, oh, can this guy run the entire route? Well, we've seen him do it. Whereas DT, I think they ran like 3 or 4 routes at Georgia Tech.
And that's like DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
N'Keal Harry can run the whole tree. He's not blazing fast.
But you don't have to be.
You don't have to be when you can create separation because you're bigger and stronger and you can stiff arm smaller guys and pick up more yards and you're tough enough to catch the ball in traffic. This to me is like a Joe Flacco. Let's do something for Joe Flacco. So the two guys, now this is super risky because the only way this makes sense, Chad, is to trade back and pick him up kind of just like DT. Like you are going to surprise everybody by taking, say you can trade with the Giants. Let's just have this argument, okay? The Giants are at 17.
Yep.
Say you can make a deal and you drop down to 17. Gives you ammo to move back up or move around in the second round and puts you at the 17th pick overall. This is my guy at the 17th pick overall.
He's going to go in those high teens, and that's a great spot to get him.
He's all over the place, mm-hmm. but wouldn't, how about that? And I'm going to pick up Dalton Risner by hook or by crook, either by moving back into the first round or moving up in the second round. So my first two guys, if I can move down, which I think they should do, is N'Keal Harry and Dalton Risner in rounds 1 through 2. And I'm going to hope I have enough capital to move up to get Mack Wilson as an inside linebacker, you know, somewhere in the second round too.
So you would bypass your Devin White, your Devin Bush.
No. This is only if I can move back. If I'm just at 10, it's Devin White, maybe Devin Bush or Ed Oliver.
But ideally, you'd love to move back. So you would bypass those three guys you just mentioned. You don't see the value in those three guys.
I do see the value in those three guys, and you can't have everything at the same time.
Right.
But I'm going to back up missing out on Bush or White with Mack Wilson. I'm going to sort of go in that direction. I'm not forgetting about the position. I'm just saying, okay, I can't have it all. I got to give Joe Flacco a couple weapons. So I'm going to give him a great lineman who can move up and down the line, and I'm going to get him the best receiver in traffic coming out of college football. And I'm going to try to do the best I can with Mac Wilson. This is why taking Ryan Finley is insane. Like, wasting a third-round pick on Ryan. And by the way, I'm going to, in the third or fourth round, try to get Kahale Waring, a huge 6'7", touchdown, third-down machine out of San Diego State. That's going to be my guy in that round. So to think of Ryan Finley? Are you nuts? That's what I want to see happen. And this is the type of thing we'll talk about on our draft special where I will blow the doors off Mike Evans. Once he comes in this argument, he'll have nothing to say. It'll be embarrassing for him, and I wish him luck. And if you'd like to be there, be the fourth caller at 303-713-1043. 303-713-1043. Food provided by Brothers Barbecue. It is the Fan War Room draft special happening on a week from today. Right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, the Broncos and C-Mac with Chad Brown.
This will get you hyped.
Welcome to Bronco Land.
You know what the NFL stands for?
What?
What have you done for me lately, Lee?
That's right. NFL.
Lighten up, Francis.
Schedule will come out here in about 10 minutes. I'm trying to see, Richie. I'm happy to announce details if we know what's going on. Usually it all drips out. And any highlights for you? What do we know about the schedule? We know the Broncos are going to open up on Monday night.
Against
the exact date.
The Raiders.
First time in 9 years the Broncos won't open at home. How about that? So the Broncos, Monday Night Football. What's the exact date? What are we talking about here? It's the first weekend of football. We're all efforting. We probably should have done this.
During the break.
Yeah. It's all right. Anyways, whatever that first Monday night is, fire up the D team of broadcasters to do the last...
September 9th, right?
Oh, okay. You sure? I'll take your word for it. That sounds about right. Also, so the Broncos start with the Raiders in Oakland. First road game. That is interesting. First time in 9 seasons the Broncos won't open at home. Okay. Do you remember? Let's see if you remember. The last time the Broncos opened on the road was in 2008. And the Broncos won the game 41-14. So there's that. See Brandon Marshall.
Yep.
We'll see.
Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown.
Test this new secondary.
Will we see Shane Ray? What did Shane Ray sign? He didn't sign.
No, he didn't sign.
God, the demise of Shane Ray, huh? It's kind of crazy.
He did like to talk to the cameras a lot, though. He was always quick to agree to an interview.
You are mean.
No, I just...
Mean person.
Like the last couple of years, I've been, why is Shane Ray talking?
Broncos are also, here's some other news. Thank you, Mike Kliss. Broncos are expected to practice with the 49ers in the days leading up to their preseason scrimmage Monday night, August 19th. So, Kyle Shanahan will be back around. Scangarello will be seeing his old team.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows who else will be bumping around that time?
Who knows?
Who knows who it could be? Better get me some gear, by the way.
What size?
D-Mac size. Just extra large. Don't embarrass me. Just, you know, whatever. Okay. It'll all fit.
All right.
So that should be fun. In terms of the entire schedule, this is awesome. It's April. We can get the entire schedule here shortly. Just a couple minutes. Be patient. And then we can make our way too early first day the schedule's out season predictions on the Broncos.
You're going to run down the wins and losses here tonight?
Oh, you do it every time. It's the most fun part about the schedule release day. You make the first prediction on the Broncos season. So that will happen in mere moments, and it would be great to have you chime in at 303-713-1043. It'll be very organic as it comes here, Chad. We'll see the race will be on to slip out the details first and just stick around. So the Broncos schedule release show starts in mere moments right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.